Chapter 12. After an hour, the alien heaved itself to its feet with a ratcheting sigh that sounded like a length of chain being dropped through a hole.
"We proceed," it said grimly, and gestured to Ramon to take the lead.
It took a little more than an hour of pacing slowly around the meadow's edge to find the other man's trail. Through the long hours of the morning and into the afternoon, Ramon took point, the Sahel trailing behind him to Manek's slow, steady plodding. It would have been a harder thing if Ramon hadn't known the kind of tricks he himself would have employed to create a false trail. Twice they came upon what looked like a mistake on the other man's part, a muddy footprint leading up onto a stony ridge, a length of roughened ground where he might have lost control as he went down a slope. Ramon guided them past the red herrings easily. The nature of the forest changed as they walked. On the higher ground, near the mountains, the trees were all ice root and pine analogues. The farther they moved toward the river, the more exotic the foliage became. Wide-branched perdida willows, with black trunks shaped like half-melted women. Towering pescados blancos, named for the paleness of their leaves and the oceanic scent of their sap. Half-mobile colonies of coral moss with bright pink skeletons peeking out from beneath the rich green flesh. The weariness and the throbbing of his knee seemed to fall away from Ramon as he caught his stride. It felt almost as if he knew beforehand where he was going, where the other Ramon had gone before him. He almost forgot Manek's lumbering form walking behind him, matching his path perfectly to avoid catching the Sahel on two different sides of the same tree. A flatfoot blatted at him as he passed, scolding him with a noise like an annoyed oboe. The thin, gnawed bones of a kiki lay scattered at the base of a small cliff, pale as the slats of the Yunea. The other Ramon was roughly following the creek that had run by the meadow where he'd set his trap. The water was an infallible guide, and though there was no trail beside it, Ramon found they were rarely out of earshot of its chuckling flow. A sense of peace infused him, and he found himself smiling. The sun rose, the temperature inched up. If he'd been wearing a shirt, Ramon would have been tempted to take it off and tuck it into his belt, not because he was overheated, but only because the air would feel good against his skin. At last, untypically, Manek called for a halt. Its skin was ashen gray, and it seemed almost unsteady on its feet.
"We will rest here," it said. "It is necessary to recuperate."
"For a little while," Ramon said. "We can't let him get too far ahead. If he gets to the river..." "Well, if he gets to the river, he'll have to take the time to build some kind of raft, and with a fucked-up hand. So I guess that could take him a while. But if he does get out on the river, we'll never catch him. We should have just used your flying box to get downstream. We could have just waited for him to drift by."
"This suggestion is of no effect. We did not. Therefore, there can be no previous shall. Your language violates the nature of time. We must rest here."
It was a good sight. The brook pooled here into a tiny lake. The afternoon sun glittered silver on its surface. A low, gray-green ground cover made a wide, soft place to rest. When Ramon lay back, the bruised leaves smelled like basil, like nutmeg, like nothing he had a name for. Manek trundled to the water's edge and looked out before closing its eyes. The red, wounded one still had a bright slit where the lid no longer entirely closed. From where he lay, Ramon could turn his head and put one eye level with the top of the ground cover and see how the patterns of sun and wind on the lake mirrored the waving of the tiny silver leaves. It took him a few minutes to spot the hidden grave. It was at the edge of the clearing, near a small waterfall where the lake once again became a brook. A swath of the ground cover stood higher than the surrounding plants. It was no longer than Ramon's forearm, no wider than his spread hand. He walked to the anomaly, the Sahel tugging at his throat. The ground, he saw, had been dug up, the plants removed and then laid back on top of the tiny excavation when it was done. Ramon felt a moment's unease. It seemed like the thing a man would do, the other Ramon, as if there was something buried here he wanted to hide. But what would that be? There hadn't been anything in his field pack precious enough to preserve. Maybe a note, some written record that would expose the aliens. But who would ever find it here? With only a moment's hesitation, might he have forgotten how many coring charges had been in the pack, or might the trap in the meadow have only used two? Ramon dug his fingers into the soft soil. Hardly an inch beneath the surface, he touched flesh. When he pulled his hand back in disgust, his fingertips were red with blood. A flat fur, skinned and raw, and buried hardly deep enough to make any difference from leaving the little body openly on the ground. He considered the corpse, and remembered the skins at the other Ramon's first camp. Whatever the man was doing, it was intentional, and he'd planned it back that long ago when traps were on his mind. Ramon lifted the thing with a branch broken from the nearest tree. There seemed to be no mechanism associated with it, no sharpened sticks or knives. He might have poisoned the meat, but it seemed unreasonable that he might expect the alien to eat it. What was the man, his other self, thinking? Ramon took the dead animal by its thin legs, walked it to the lake, and flung it out into the water. The body sank like a stone. Manek's eyes remained closed, its stance still as a statue and as unresponsive. Ramon debated for a moment. He could wake the thing and tell it what he had found, or else keep the other Ramon's secret. The strange animal offering made him uncomfortable. His first impulse was to talk about it, but if it was part of his twin's plot to defeat the aliens, perhaps it would be better to hold back. Manek's eyes flickered open.
"I can go on no more today," it said.
It actually sounded apologetic, perhaps even ashamed.
"I am too weak. I must recuperate further."
"That's okay," Ramon said. He felt almost sorry for it. How badly injured was it? Was it dying? "It'll be dark soon anyway. We might as well camp for the night." Manek remained quiescent through the rest of the day and into the night. Ramon broke branches and fronds to make himself a lean-to, the sahel stretching to accommodate his movements. When night fell, he roused Manek long enough to scoop water from a tiny creek and find a double handful of sug beetles. The alien didn't ask about his change in diet, and Ramon didn't volunteer any information. When the beetles were reduced to their empty, colorful shells, Ramon lay back on the soft ground, looking up into the vast starscape of night. The small fire he'd made to boil water for washing out his wound and cooking had fallen to coals and ashes. In other circumstances, it would have been a perfect night. In the distance, something called, an animal or bird or insect that might never have been seen by human eyes. The sound was high and fluting, and a moment after it came, two more answered it. Another memory filled his awareness. Elena, in her apartment. They had had one of their first fights over his habit of camping outside the van. She had been certain that a wild animal would find him and kill him in the darkness. She'd had a friend taken by Red Jackets, and she claimed to suffer nightmares. He'd been sleeping with her for a month and hadn't seen any evidence of it, but when he said so, she only got angrier. The argument had ended with her throwing a kitchen knife at him. He'd slapped her. Afterward, they'd screwed. Far above him, a meteor streaked across the sky, burning and vanishing in the space of a heartbeat. The sick gringo peered down on them from the stars, and on the horizon, the stone man was beginning to rise. He knew she was crazy. Elena was the kind of woman who wound up killing herself, or her lover, or her children, and he didn't love her any more than she loved him. It was all perfectly clear to him, and also totally unimportant. People, he decided, didn't come together from love or hatred. They came together because they were the kind of people who fit. She was a crazed bitch. He was a drunk and a killer. They deserved each other. Except he wasn't a drunk when he was here. In the field, he was sober as a priest. He was a better man out here. His mind was growing muzzy and losing itself in sleep when the alien jerked to attention. Ramon sat up. "What is it?" he whispered.
"Something is observing us," Manek said.
A chill went up Ramon's spine. There were enough real monsters waiting out here in the bush that Sao Paulo featured relatively few myths about duppies and mothmen and mysterious unknown creatures. Ghosts were a different story, though. There were plenty of ghosts here. From the ghost of Ugly Pete, a prospector who wandered the night looking for a replacement for the head he'd lost in a mine accident, to Black Maria, who appeared to men at the moment of their deaths. One cult in Little Dog believed that Sao Paulo was where the dead of Earth went when they died. So the night here swarmed with ghosts, like moths around a light. And out here, in the dark wilderness, that was not a good thing to think about. Although, of course, he didn't believe in such things. Whatever was out there in the dark, it was more likely to be a real physical creature than a ghost. With that thought, Elena's terror of red jackets and chupacabras abruptly returned to Ramon, and he rose, moving closer to the huge alien. He closed his eyes for the space of 20 breaths, adapting them to darkness, then scanned the meadow's edge. It was dark enough that he couldn't see anything directly. Only his peripheral vision would pick out movement from the gloom beneath the trees. "There," he whispered, "just to the right of the white-barked tree. In that bush." Manek did something complex with its arm. A flash of light extended from its hand, and the bush exploded in a ball of fire. Ramon jumped back.
"Come," Manek said, and began moving forward.
Ramon hung back half a pace, struggling between curiosity, fear of whatever was in the trees, and unease at his alien captor's weapon. He had thought the thing was unarmed after the Unea's crash. It was the sort of mistake that would get him killed if he wasn't more careful. The corpse at the foot of the tree, twisted in sudden agony and scorched black on its spine, was a jabalí rojo, something like a boar that had decided to be a fox instead halfway through its evolution. The ornate tusks at the sides of its open, lifeless mouth were better suited for impressing female jabalí than attacking men or aliens. "It's nothing," Ramon said. "It was no danger to us."
"It might have been the man," Manek said.
Was there regret in its tone? Relief? Fear? Who could say? When they returned to the modest camp, Ramon lay back down, but found it hard to sleep. His mind worked variation after variation on his new circumstances. Manek was still well-armed. The other Ramon didn't have a pistol or any more coring charges. He tried to imagine ways in which he might be able to give his other self an edge, some chance that would make his own freedom possible. And what then? He found himself staring at Manek, his strange alien shape silhouetted against the cold stars, like some pagan idol dedicated to unimaginable gods. Before long, he found himself beginning to drift. In his torpor, he realized that the alien had been the one learning all this time. How a man ate, how he pissed, how he slept. Ramon had learned nothing. For all his strategy and subterfuge, he knew hardly more about the alien than when he'd first woken in darkness. He would learn. If he had been created, as the thing said, then, in a way, Ramon was part alien himself, the product of an alien technology. He was a new man. He could learn new ways. He would come to understand the aliens, what they believed, how they thought. He would leave no tool unused. Sleep stole into him, taking him gently down below consciousness, his determination to know still locked in his mind like a rat in a pit terrier's teeth. Ramon Espejo felt dreams lapping at his mind like water at the bank of a river, and at last let them come. They were strange, dreams such as Ramon Espejo had never dreamed before. But, after all, he was not Ramon Espejo.